This is a News Laundry podcast, and you're listening to the Awful and Awesome Entertainment Wrap.
Hello, hello. This is the Awful and Awesome Entertainment Wrap, episode 344. This is Rajeshi Sen.
I'm JP Arunachalam.
We like cutting into each other. It's okay. And then we'll get a meal saying that, you know, y'all should not cut into each other and all that. So it's okay.
Literally, you know, we've planned it all.
Yeah.
All the cuts are intentional.
This is like a South film. Rajeshi and Jayashri Productions are now going to get you the best and the worst of entertainment. So we have some very good stuff. Jayashri will agree. There's an Oscar.
I look grim.
Yeah,
I look angry.
Oscar winning Poor Things, American Fiction. Then there's Manjumel. Am I saying it properly? Manjumel?
Manjumel, not bad.
Say it? Manjumel.
Manjumel Boys.
So I said it correctly. Manjumel Boys. And Oscars. The Oscars. But before that, we have a very important announcement.
Yes, so this episode of Awful and Awesome is outside the paywall this week.
Lucky.
It will be outside the paywall next week as well, just like Hafta and Charcha. You can catch full episodes on our YouTube channel. And also, please remember, we rely on subscriptions, your support. We don't take ads. And once these podcasts go back behind the paywall, we hope you will support us and subscribe to News Laundry.
Before we get into what we have to discuss, the headlines for this week are...
So the 96th Academy Awards were held last Sunday and witnessed a bump in viewership. An estimated 19.5 million people watched the ceremony on ABC. This is the biggest number drawn by the telecast in 4 years. Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer swept 7 awards and Emma Stone won the Best Actress trophy. We shall discuss this in detail.
Yes, because Jayashri is really looking forward to discussing this. Alexander Payne's Oscar nominee, The Holdovers, found itself embroiled in controversy ahead of the ceremony after accusations of plagiarism from Simon Stephenson, the co-writer of Luca, the Pixar film by Disney. The Stephenson has said that there are similarities between Holdovers and his 2013 script, Frisco.
Yes, and I think in very upsetting news, a bunch of Allu Arjun fans reportedly beat up a man in Bangalore and forced him to chant Jai Allu Arjun. This is as per the Indian Express.
I know if these were friends of mine, they wouldn't know why they are being told. Like, they wouldn't know what Allu Arjun
is. Who is Allu Arjun?
Allu Arjun. Which would make it even more interesting and even worse.
More upsetting.
Days after a video off. So first of all, who is Elvis Yadav? Elvis Yadav is a Big Boss winner also.
Oh.
That is how we all, the common people, know about him. But he's a social media influencer and a YouTuber. And days after a video of Elvis Yadav beating up a fellow YouTuber, Max Stone, went viral on social media, Yadav has issued a clarification alleging that the latter had threatened his parents. So then it's okay to beat up, right?
Yeah,
and FIR has been registered in the case.
This is like, take my wife's name out of your filthy mouth.
I'll just kill you then.
Fair enough. And finally, renowned composer Hans Zimmer and India's Shashwat Sachdev are set to collaborate on the upcoming series Virdi, alongside artist James Everingham. Thrilling,
absolutely thrilling.
Week.
But now to more thrilling things, which is we are going to start with this film with Jayashri. Just was so excited because she stayed up last night to watch.
Yeah.
It's
so, yes. So, but before we get any further in discussing the movie Poor Things, Rajeshri, I have some things to say to you. So, I know we're not close. We
now
don't know
we'll
each other
never
very...
be close. Is it that we'll never be close?
We don't know each other very well, but in the 5 or 6 years I've been here, I have edited whatever copies you've written. I've edited with love and care.
And
that's
I've shown signs of some intelligent life when I've written those copies, right?
You have. And then also on our last episode of Awful and Awesome together, we bonded over Robbie Williams and his underwear.
Correct.
You told me your mother and or sister is also named Jayashri. So
my
grandmother.
Correct.
A grandmother. Correct.
Yeah.
Deep affection. And then yet last night, you threw me under the bus because I said, what should I watch? Should I watch American Fiction or Poor Things, and you led me to Poor Things.
So, which has won an Oscar for Best Actress, among others.
So many terrible movies have won Oscars, we may add, which we can discuss further in detail. But yes, I had to watch Poor Things and I had to watch it over dinner. So I did not get my calorie intake last night because it was a struggle. So
it's a 2-hour, 25-minute film. And all of you can watch it on Hotstar. And it has not been edited. I just want to censored, I have to say. Or if it has, they've done... Like, I don't know what there was that they've censored. Because it's quite graphic. Also, it's very seamlessly censored. Then you can't make out that it's been censored. But it's directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, who also made The Favourite. You watched The Favourite?
I watched 3 of his movies, surprisingly. I usually watch nothing. I watched The Favourites, The Lobster, and Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Oh, Killing of a Sacred Deer is also his. I didn't understand the end. That was very good till the end went a little...
haywire.
But what a good film that was. That was really great.
The Favourite, I think... I was nice. It
could have been better than it was, given that it had Olivia Colman and this thing, right? Emma Stone.
Rachel Weisz, I think.
Oh, Rachel Weisz was also.
But I think it's a recurring theme, no? So basically, The Favourites and this movie are both about women who have a lot of sex or who want to have a lot of sex.
How you brought it down to this. So this is basically based on a 1992 novel by Alasdair Gray. And it's about, so you don't really get, it's sort of Victorian, but you don't get the timeline for the simple reason that there are trams which are zipping over your head, zip lining over your head and all. So it's one of those, like much of the film, it doesn't, many things don't make sense about it, especially the date it's set in, but it's clearly in a time before, it's not modern times, let's put it that way. There are no phones.
It's like this sort of retro futuristic.
Yeah, retro. It's very Wes Anderson in a way.
I thought it was very Willy Wonka. I think the Willy correct terms. I think the correct thing is it's supposed to be very steampunk, but it looked very sort of chocolate factory.
Yeah.
But, and I say this bitterly.
Yes. So it's the setting, the main story is that Emma Stone is has been rescued by Willem Dafoe, who always plays a slightly oddball character. And I don't think he's ever played a normal character in his life. Like a normal man who loves his wife and children and goes to work. He doesn't do all those characters. So Willem Dafoe's face is all cut up and sewn back together. You can make out that he's like a patchwork person. And he's a doctor. And you realize that through the story, it comes out that his father basically used to experiment on him on genetics and biological experiments and all to understand the human body. Yes. And he rescues Emma Stone, who has tried to kill herself and who dies. But he takes a baby's brain, her baby's brain, her unborn child's brain, and puts it into her dead body's skull. And basically, I'm trying to make it sound as logical as possible. And then you see the evolution of this woman from being like from a baby. She's how babies learn to speak and behave and all. Yeah. And her journey of self-discovery to becoming a very well, not well-spoken, but a very clear-thinking woman who travels she goes to Lisbon to... Where do they go? To Athens they go as well, right?
They go to Lisbon, they go to Alexandria, and then they end up in Paris.
In a brothel.
And then comes up. So basically, I think, Willem Dafoe's father seems to have been this kind of mad scientist.
Yeah.
He also now seems to be a kind of mad scientist where he does all these experiments in his house. You can see there's, you know, a half duck, half dog sort of creatures running around. So Emma Stone tries to die by suicide. He rescues her. He takes the unborn fetus from her stomach and implants its brain in her head.
Yeah.
So when we first meet her, she's this sort of just learning about the world around her. There's this curiosity.
And she's like a child, the way that if you see, they see an insect. Most children would whack it because they, like a toddler would whack it, not understanding what it is. And the joy that children get from violence, right? Because that's the nice part about being a child, that you don't have to. There are no restrictions of society on you. You just do what you want and go with the flow, basically. And he gets, so he's a very well-renowned professor.
He's a professor of
medicine, and especially of surgery and so on. And he has one of his students, which is Rami Yusuf, that you come and work with me. I want you to basically detail out in reports what you see of this girl who stays in my house. And that's how her vocabulary improves also, because she's constantly talking to Rami Yusuf. And he slowly starts falling in love with her, as in Rami Yusuf. And they decide to get married. But then Mark Ruffalo, who I thought was very good. You did not enjoy
Loved
Mark.
Him.
He was
the best part of it.
So good.
Yeah. Because... So basically, but like the one thing I thought, like, okay, so she's...
There's a sexual awakening. That's also
And again, like most, you know, adolescents, she sort of discovers masturbation, except that she's in the body of a fully grown woman.
Yeah.
And instead of agreeing, she loves Rami Yusuf, but also she doesn't really know what she wants or who she is or what the world is.
And she hasn't met any other guy also, right?
Yeah.
He's the only one.
Along comes Mark Ruffalo, who's this caddish, hot little lawyer. And then he convinces her, like, come, let's explore the world. So story starts because she runs away and she goes with him to Lisbon. And that's when the movie transitions also from black and white to
color.
So it's... See, the thing is, there's a lot about the movie that I felt like I should like, because it's about this woman on this journey of exploration and she's curious. And Emma Stone, I thought, was pretty compelling because there was this lot of like physicality in how she transformed. Like she was learning to walk. And then by the end of it, like you said, she reads a lot. She discovers philosophy and politics and she discovers inequalities in the world. And like, you know, it's very cool. But then, I don't know, I just found... So while I could see a lot of sweetness, I also found it
pretentious,
unpleasant to watch sometimes. Like, I don't know. It was just, especially I understand the sort of idea of the sexual awakening. And okay, see, so Mark Ruffalo is very cute and compelling. And he's this very typical sort of bounder, right? He wants sex. But then he's confronted by, he thinks he's a man of the world. He's unshackled by society.
Yeah.
But then he takes up with Emma Stone, who wants sex.
But who's truly unshackled by society.
Who's truly unshackled. And she's wants sex. She wants to pursue sex with different people because she doesn't understand the idea that, you know, society means a woman must only sleep with this one man. So he gets embarrassed by her and what she's, you know, but... Even then, at the end of it, it felt like things were happening, but I felt no sense of investment in the way the plot was sort of unfolding. I liked Mark Ruffalo. I thought Emma Stone was great, but I just did not connect to it as a story or even as a concept. And I did find it unpleasant to watch in that, like, what was happening? Like, what was... As the plot was unfolding, and yes, she went to Lisbon and then they went to Alexandria. And Alexandria, she was confronted by the poor and she felt really sad.
Yeah.
And then she went to Paris and she went to a brothel. And it just felt like, okay, here's like a girl on a wild adventure. And the adventure was just not exciting for me to watch.
I also, so I felt it was too pulled, made too long. They could first of all, they could have hacked off 30 minutes. Like we would have still got the point of it. And I felt there were too many pieces which had to be, boxes which had to be ticked on this journey. Right. So, you know, that she'll discover philosophy, that she will have her sexual awakening, that she will come back. And like, you know, points made like a man might go and have sex with everyone, but then he will come back to the stable woman who has waited for him. And so they tried to turn that subversive and made it, like she is doing it as opposed to the guy doing it.
But it was very forced subversive.
Yeah, like now this will happen, now that will happen. You know that why it's being why it's being shown, because this is, if you don't show her coming back to that guy and asking, saying that she wants to marry him, then how will you show the how society actually treats women and men? Like, you could have got those points without certain boxes being ticked. I thought the parts which were, again, so I felt there were elements of it which were nice, but which... Like, the whole film did not, the sum of its parts is, the parts were more than the sum. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and I felt, I think for me, the specific point where I was, so I liked the, again, so it's divided up into chapters. I liked the Portugal chapter. It was interesting enough. I liked the chapter on the ship.
Yeah,
then by the point, by the time we got to Paris, like you said, it was just the same sort of thing. And then when she discovered, like I looked away for 5 minutes and then I looked back and I was like, oh, she's now a socialist because she's discovered politics.
Ah, now she's
like, I was having none of that. Like, it was just, now I was like, okay, enough, go home, wrap it up.
So I felt like Willem Dafoe part, you know, taking that Frankenstein's monster and then making Frankenstein's monster basically becomes Frankenstein in this, because he then creates his own little monster, which is Emma. And so they were clever. That's what I'm saying. It's a clever concept, but the execution of it over 2 hours, 20 minutes, I felt gets drawn out too much. So even like things like that his digestive system has been removed, right? Mm. And then he burps out that bubble every time. Yeah. So it's cute as a concept to write down that. And so what are the, like, it's a character fleshing out a character.
Yeah.
But then after a point, you're like, okay, now you're really pulling everything too far, I felt.
Yeah, and I feel like in that process, it was also sort of, there were certain tropes that were still coming back. Like, okay, yes, it's supposed to be a very whimsical film, but at the end of the day, she is that very manic pixie dream girl sort of. She's not like other girls. And while it was fun to sort of go on that journey, I felt like it needed to sort of wind up in a much faster and better way. But then the worst thing is I finished watching this movie and with a curse on my lips, as I thought of you, I lay in bed and then I was reading like reviews because I was like, there must be a review that will agree with me. And I went through so many and they all loved the film. And the only reviews that didn't like it were written by like white conservative men who hated that she went off and had sex and all. So I was like, my God, Rajshri has made me a white conservative man.
Yes, you've become.
In my outlook to this film. But
just see.
And I think, like, I really tried to give it a chance to like it. I wanted to like how weird and bizarre it is. But I think overall, I just came away finding it a watch that I had to sort of suffer through. But
that was the aim, because I knew otherwise if you watched the other film, you would have definitely liked it, which is American Fiction.
And then I read up about it and it sounded amazing.
Yes, because it is very nice. So
how dare you do this to me?
So this was available on Hotstar, but American Fiction. Huh?
Also adding to my annoyance of Poor Things was I didn't know it was on Hotstar because I Googled it and it didn't
you
show up. So
bought it on Apple.
Wait, first I rented it on Apple, but then the Apple TV has a glitch, so it didn't show up. So then I rented it on YouTube, and it was not a very good print, and I was feeling very annoyed. And so I'd already spent about 250 rupees on this, and then I found it for free on Hotstar.
This is not my fault. This is our producer Priyali's fault. You should have informed. But you could have watched it for free. So someone also told me when I said I'm going to watch Poor Things, a friend of mine said, oh, buy it on Apple. So I said, why would I? It's on for free on Hotstar.
Yeah.
And she said, but it must be censored. I said, I'll live through it. I'm not going to buy it on this thing.
It was so wildly uncensored. So,
yeah, that's what I told her. I said, if it's been censored, I don't even know what has been removed because it's pretty graphic on this. But
it's all there to see.
Yes, but American Fiction, which is the film that Jessie could have watched, but then it wouldn't be as interesting to discuss. That's available on Prime Video, and I highly recommend it. It's a very, very lovely film. It's directed by a first-time director, by the way. He's never made another film before. He's a 40-year-old Cord Jefferson. It's the first film he's directed.
Yes.
And he also said that, you know, y'all keep talking about how expensive films are to produce, but instead of backing a $40 million film, why don't you back $41 million films? And we still make pretty good films on a smaller budget. And it's actually a great... So this is also very clever, but they don't stretch it to, again, that, you know, they've taken a trope and stretched it like that. So it's about this whole thing, which I strongly believe that there's a certain kind, even out of India, I feel there's a certain kind of English fiction comes out of India, which is written for America and UK and all, which is...
The crushed smell of jasmine.
And the woman in the cotton sari and naxalism and one big house, and then she leaves.
Spice jars.
Exactly. So the same way I feel a lot of fiction, when there's a black family, it is all about how downtrodden and difficult. And of course, there is that happening in real life, but it's not, everyone is not like that. Yeah. And there are other stories to tell, but there's a, in this, the actor is Jeffrey Wright. He plays a black author who's written many books, and his latest book, which he's trying, manuscript, which he sent to, I think, 9 publishers, who his agent has sent, and all the publishers have rejected it. Also because they've said, we don't like, you know, write some, we want some black fiction about, the downtrodden, stereotypical black books, as he puts it. So he, just for the lark of it, he writes a full book, which is under a pseudonym, which he starts writing as a lark, but he finishes the entire thing, about this black character is there who's speaking like pidgin English and you know, shooting someone and all that.
All the tropes are in this.
And the agent just sends it to publishers, and he gets a $70 million signing fee or something like that. And first he said, what nonsense and all. Then they just run with it. They say, okay, let's go with it. And they are doing like, you know, and you get how these publishers also pitch it to, like, say, a Hotstar on Netflix for a film, and who's going to act in it, and who's, and oh my God, this, when they are even speaking to him, and he never comes on camera, he only does phone calls, because they all know who he is, right?
So it's a pseudonym and all.
Yeah, so he'll speak in that, like, they'll try and be very street with him, and he'll also be very, so
that
it's very
great.
It's great. And he
is it funny?
It's very funny. It's very funny, but it's subtle funny. It's not ha 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 kind of, like, you know, it's not like slapstick, obviously.
Like satire type.
Yeah. And he goes home to meet his, I've forgotten, her mother, I think. And Tracy Ellis Ross, who's Dinah Ross's daughter, she plays his sister, and Sterling K. Brown is his brother. And Sterling K. Brown was also nominated for an Oscar. He's excellent. He's his gay plastic surgeon brother. And they have this very fraught relationship, the two brothers. So that's what, a lot of things are discussed in this, but it's very, very clever, it's funny, and it's such a good commentary on what sells in fiction in publishing. Like,
well, it sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so you'll really like it, and you would have if you'd watched it last night. But
it's very useful of you to tell me this.
Yeah, no. But too bad you had to watch
Bumsy. I wonder how that happened, that I didn't come across this movie. But you know, this is reminding me of this TV show that I watched called The Other Black Girl.
Yeah.
Which is also about, it's about black editors in the publishing industry, except that was a bad show, which is just my luck. And this sounds like a terrific movie.
So. No, it is. It's really good. I'm trying to see what they were nominated for. 1 second. They won Best Adapted Screenplay. That's the, and that guy walked up.
But they would have been nominated for a bunch of things.
Yeah, they were nominated. Sterling Brown was nominated for Best Actor in a Supporting Role. Then this one was also Jeffrey Wright was nominated for Best Actor.
Okay.
So they were nominated for quite a few.
I'm seeing nomination, Best Picture and everything.
So it's worth, it's also one of those films which is worth watching, because a lot of the time the best picture films are like,
wait,
oh my
I'll
God.
Make a note though. Amazon Prime, no?
Yeah.
I will not buy it on YouTube.
Yes, don't buy it. You don't need to buy it. And after a long time, I'm also a little fed up of watching, you know, serious, dramatic, very sad, and some like everything is a commentary on the sadness of real life. But when I open the newspaper, I anyway have to, at least when I'm watching something, it should not be depressing me.
No, you are speaking my language. Also, see, I have the same issue with books also. I mean,
yeah.
You know, these, I get it. Like, I know that books are supposed to reflect periods in which they are written and all, but do you really have to read every sad thing that has ever happened?
That's like, what...
It's too much. Where is the escapism? Like, yeah. Which is why people used to go to the movies.
So American fiction is really good because it is a commentary on this whole publishing world, but, and this whole, like, you know, like the black man should definitely be given that. So there's a very funny, I don't want to give away what happens. Basically, he is called, Jeffrey Wright is called to be a part of this jury on, I think, the top 10 books for the year or something. So he and this other black woman who's written the stereotypical black novel, and that's why she's the toast of the town, along with four other white authors. And the dialogue that happens about black fiction is just hilarious, absolutely, because it's very, it's like soaked in irony, absolutely. Nice. No. So it's very nice. It's a clever, bright, intelligently written film.
What a shame we couldn't say the same about poor things. But yeah.
So we have an announcement on the News Minute NL election fund. Jayashree, you want to just tell people?
Yes. So as you know, general elections are coming up in a few weeks. And yet again, News Laundry has partnered with the News Minute to bring you the important stories straight from the ground. So this time, instead of doing one big fund project, we're trying something new. We have smaller projects divided up into themes, and you can choose which one you'd like to power. So we'll have over 15 reporters, producers, and editors from News Laundry and News Minute on the ground, covering various states. We'll also have special election shows with Manisha, Atul, Danya, and Sudipto, and your contributions will directly power their work. So head over to newslaundry.com/2024electionfund to make your contribution. Also, if you are on iOS, we have an election fund contribution option on the app. But you can also contribute via your website, on your phone, or the desktop browser. That way, we will save Apple commission, guys, which is very important.
Yes.
Throw your iPhones out the window.
That I feel everyone should throw all their... Just see, that's why I'm using an HP laptop. It's my...
See, I'm using an Acer laptop, and I'm using a phone I guarantee you've never heard of. It is an IKU phone.
That is a Vivo. That's interesting.
A Vivo sub-brand, yeah. So...
My friend heads Vivo now, so I'll tell him that at least someone's using those phones.
Tell him I really like it. He can send me many new
He might send you more. Maybe he'll send for the entire NL staff.
No, just for me, please. Okay, just only for your Chennai bureau.
So tell me about this film that you watched in the theater. You went to the theater and watched this.
Yes, I very rarely do this, so it was an experience. So the movie is Manjumal Boys. It's directed by Chidambaram. So to start off, it is pegged as a survival thriller. And I will say straight out, if this is a genre I dislike intensely, but it's my own fault. I mean, I get very anxious and stressed. You remember that James Franco one where he has to like cut off his arm?
Oh, I loved it. Where he cuts off his... Okay, I also like gruesome things a lot. So if out an eye and all, like watch like that.
So that is absolutely not for me. So I went into this a little hesitant. So... the basic premise of it is there's a group of men in Cochin, near Cochin, and they decided to go to Kodaikanal for a holiday. Mm-hmm. So there are about 10 or 15 of them and they go. So the thing that you need to know is there was a 1990s movie called Guna. It's a Tamil movie starring Kamal Haasan. And it's Kamal Haasan is a mentally unwell man who kidnaps a woman and he sets up in a cave in Kodaikanal. So this cave is now known as the Guna Cave. So these chaps from Kerala decide we will go on an adventure in Kodaikanal. And while they're there, they're like, okay, let's go check out Guna Caves. So, you know, there are lots of forest department gates and signs and barriers, but, you know, they're reckless and they're having fun and they've had a lot of drink.
It is
based on a true story, but I will not give away the ending. So they decide, okay, let's climb over all these gates and barriers and go into the cave anyway. And then we'll, you know, spray paint our names and people will know that we've been here. So until then, it's a fun movie. It's got some great lines. There's lots of jokes. Their chemistry is electric. And everything is great until one of them plummets into a deep crevice inside the cave. It's known as Devil's Kitchen amongst locals. And this is true. And no one who has fallen in has ever returned because you're presumed dead. You're falling basically into a very narrow network of caves. So then suddenly everything changes, becomes a survival thriller. You're wondering, is the man alive? These guys are figuring out how they can get him out. And then it sort of transforms into, one, the story of the rescue. And two, it's also a great story about friendship. And like it's very tight. It's very tense. It's also very charming and very affectionate. And the song from Gunnar comes back in one of the most impactful scenes I've ever watched in recent times. And see, the thing is, like, I watch movies in theaters very rarely. When I go on Mondays because Mondays I'm off. And this was a Monday afternoon, a very small screen near my house. And it filled up. And like the crowd was cheering and screaming and singing. And I'm not one to really buy into theater experience. You know, I'm like, I want to be able to watch a movie. I can watch it at home because I have a great setup. But man, that theater experience was electrifying. And I've heard people say the same thing, like, of watching it in Noida, that it was full. The multiplex near my house
had
a show
really
every
impressive,
time.
That in Noida and all, it's full, right?
Yeah, and so the multiplex near my house had a show every 10 minutes. And this is like the early days of Rajinikanth movies, where there was that much sort of buzz over a cult classic. And so, yeah, I mean, if I haven't said it yet, I loved it. It was moving. It was
so
funny.
Say Malayalam cinema is just the kind of cinema that comes out. And what's, I think a lot of it credit should be given to OTT, that people like me, say, who would never end up unless the film comes to a theater over here, and I've read good reviews, would I go and watch the film, right?
Exactly. Why
but
would you, right?
Now the kind of cinema you're able to, and especially because it's, I find Malayalam cinema far more evolved than like Tamil cinema and all. Like it's not flashy and like there's no histrionics and all that to it. I'm sure there is, but not in the ones I've seen.
So that's what I've said before. So the thing is that my husband is Malayali, which is why I tend to watch a lot of Malayalam movies. And the thing is that he curates the movies that I watch. So I tend to watch only the really good ones, like Manjumal Boys. So I come away thinking, oh my God,
like
Malayalam
me,
cinema.
Who thinks that, wow, it's so evolved. And
then I'll make the mistake of watching trash like Bro Daddy, which is actually a movie. And it is so bad. And you're like, okay, the other exists. But also I think it's a great and exciting sort of time for Malayalam cinema.
Yeah.
And something about this movie has just spoken to Tamil Nadu. Like, I think, so the song itself from Gunnar has sort of become this friendship anthem, when before it was a slightly creepy love song. You know, like my Instagram reels are full of random people doing stuff to this song. And it's like this sort of, I don't know, and just the sort of way the theater was reacting to it, the way like the public has reacted to it. I just think it's an exciting sort of film to have been able to watch. Like,
so I'm hoping that it comes to...
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I'll find out which was that Noida or Delhi theater.
No, I'm sure it must be in Delhi, actually. I should check. It can't just be in Noida that they're showing it.
It's
nice
crossed 150 crores, I think, as of yesterday. So, it's quite a great thing.
And it's nice that a film which has nothing to do... But that's the other thing. At least the Malu films that I've watched also. Yeah. Tell me that Kumbhalagni Nights and all, it's what? Malu? Is it
you
not?
You like it, no.
It was nice. I thought I liked it. Don't know. No?
I loved it. I watched it three
times
in the theater.
The way you said it, I thought, did I not? Was I not supposed to like it?
I was highly suspicious of
it. No. I really liked it. So that's what I'm saying. That it's not... I find the stories are not the traditional, like... boy-girl romance somehow linking up to like there's, it's so much about slice of life or an incident which is taken, and that entire film, like what you're talking about over here, that this survival story, that you don't see that in other, like in Hindi cinema and all, it will be one rando art film which will be made like that, right? So
and these are not, that's the thing, right? These are not pegged as art films. They're just very realistic. And again, it's realistic, but without constantly being unpleasant. Like, it's not like everything that happens has to have a moral or a greater sort of lesson for the audience. It's just how people talk and live.
Oh, I want to watch this for sure.
Also, this movie has the two sort of, out of the cast, I think there are just two who are really well known, and both of them were in Kumbhalangi Nights, which is Saubin and Srinath Basi.
Oh, so then I'll recognize them.
Go. Also, you like survival.
I love. So if someone dies or loses a leg or something, it would make it even better for me.
I'll not reveal whether any limbs were lost. Does an animal come up
and eat one of them or something? No?
No. Oh, but perhaps you'll never know.
Perhaps you'll never know. This is true.
If you're lucky, they might.
But from this thing from Manjimal Boys to the biggest award ceremony in cinema happened, which is the Oscars 2024, which is the 96th one, which means 4 years later is going to be massive because it will be the 100th year of it.
So thrilling.
Yes.
Were you also very into the Oscars like a while
ago? When I was younger, I used to like look forward to the Oscars and all. Now it's more like I watched it because it's also coming on OTT. It's not like you have to watch. And now with Tata Sky and all that, you can record it, na? Ever since you had that Tata Sky Plus game, I used to record it and then I'd fast forward.
How quaint you are.
I fast forward even on Hotstar. I fast forward like that.
I fast forward bits of poor things. Yeah.
So. I watched that film. Do you remember Mallika Sheravat's film? That Kiss film. I watched the whole thing on fast forward. I finished the film in 7 minutes, I think. And I knew exactly what had happened in that film also. Because it was so intellectual after all. But this time's Oscars was hosted by Jimmy Kimmel. And he was quite good, I have to say. No, it wasn't like sometimes they'll get the comics or a talk show host and it's like, okay, what are they saying? So 1 year they got Anne Hathaway and James Franco and they were both stoned out of their mind,
So that was the period when I used to watch the Oscars. So, you know, like in the days running up to it, you'd be like, oh, which have I seen all the Oscar movies, which is left? Yeah. And then the announcement of who was hosting was like an exciting thing. And like there was... I don't know, I felt, okay, maybe I was also young and now I'm old and jaded. But, you know, there was like a kind of buzz around it. Also, now I think Jimmy Kimmel is just a safe choice. They've been bringing him back year after year.
So, what did
you think of his edgy joke on Robert Downey Jr.?
What did he say about Robert Downey Jr.?
He said, Robert Downey Jr. was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Oppenheimer. And he said, you must be on a high.
Yeah, this is the highest.
And then he kind of doubled down a little bit, and everybody was like, "Oh, Robert Downey Jr. looked so angry." But also, Robert Downey Jr.'s
I think his face has become like that now. I thought his Donald Trump joke was very funny, which wasn't a joke. He just read out that tweet. Donald Trump was watching because he's such a loser, also, that he's watching Oscars and he's tweeting about it because that's what. The to be president, second time president of America, the way things are
I think Jimmy Kimmel was safe. I found his monologues okay,
it was nothing chatteringly funny or anything, but it was
pleasant enough.
He was pleasant company in a party when you have people who don't upset you, but they're sweet and nice to have around like that.
But I feel like the thing is that, okay, like, so this is my little soapbox, right? Like, which is that I feel like, okay, the Oscars, I don't see the relevance of them so much anymore. I do think art is very political. I think celebrities know this. And I think Jimmy Kimmel himself made his speech political only in the fact that he talked about how Los Angeles is at its heart a union town, which kind of surprised me. He was talking about the writer strikes and he said, we are a union town. We will stand with the union, Zara. But my thing is that just there's a very acceptable sort of flavor of politics that's allowed at these ceremonies. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Like Jimmy Kimmel was safe and he hit it.
Yeah.
And everything else was just about same old celebrities and the same old movies.
But it's always like that, I feel.
The bump was that Jonathan Glazer, his speech where he sort of referenced Gaza. And then it just went back to...
That was the only one. And then another person. Oh, the Ukraine filmmaker who won.
And I think a handful of people were wearing, you know, little ceasefire pins.
Yeah. So what I did like was that they addressed the writer's strike that had happened.
Yeah.
And I had found it very impressive even then that all the actors, like really well-known actors, had become part of the protests. Yeah. And I've forgotten which film it was. I think it was Oppenheimer. They didn't go in for the screening. They were the first press screening was supposed, press screening, now it was the screening of the film, and yeah, the entire cast was on the red carpet, and they heard that the writer's strike had started, and they didn't even go in, they just left and they joined the writer's strike. So I can't imagine something like that in, say, in Hindi cinema happening. Can you imagine?
No.
They said, first we'll finish our press launch, please. And then we'll see whether we go back, or we'll send a PR person to go and say that we also support. So that these guys actually, and that so many of the actors paid money to these writers to keep, because they had no livelihood for so many months.
Champions like Drew Carey. Drew Carey made sure they had a meal. He paid for all meals at a restaurant at the site where the strike was going on for those, that entire period while they were on strike. So we're just...
So that way, I always find like Hollywood and like, of course, they have their sellouts and all, but their sellouts are far fewer than the people who stand up for something. And they it because compared to, I'm saying, if you compare to our celebrities, because our celebrities are busy dancing at Neeta Bhabhi's
zoo opening. It was not a pre-wedding. It was
a zoo opening where they will all dance and all. That is what we are good at doing. So when you compare...
So what you're saying is Hollywood is lucky that Bollywood has set the bar so low.
Yes.
So, okay, but now, what did you think of all the big wins and
when I watched Oppenheimer, I had really loved it. I did really like the film. I haven't watched Killers of the Flower Moon because it's 5 hours or something. It's not 5 hours. It's three
but
and
it's
a
good.
Half.
I was put off by the length, but it was good.
Yeah, so I have to sit down and watch that because I know I have to watch that like properly. I can't just walk in and out of the film. Yeah. I did not care much for Barbie at all. I went to watch Barbie with my friend's daughters, one who's 16 and one who's 18. And the 18-year-old finished the film and she said, Oppenheimer was much better than this. So I said, yes, I can imagine. But I did think Ryan Gosling's performance of I'm Just Ken was hilarious, absolutely.
Also, like, he's one of the very few stars that just seems to be having fun. Like, he's throwing himself into it. Like, no sort of holding back.
Yeah.
It was great fun.
And that Slash was on stage. And first I thought, is it Slash or is it someone who looks like Slash? Where was Slash? So, but I get, I still think best director should have gone to Anatomy of a Fall. Yeah, and even best film, like, one of them should have gone to Anatomy of a Fall because it's so good. Absolutely. Yeah. But a lot of this has to do with lobbying, right? The entire thing is, which is what Jimmy Kimmel does say at one point. He said that this one didn't get nominated. Poor thing.
And it's your fault.
Yeah, he said, Barbie. That Margot Robbie, that Barbie
Greta
wasn't nominated.
Didn't get
right?
the nomination for Best Director.
Yeah. So, which is the thing. It's all about lobbying and all. But I thought most of the ones like Best Original Screenplay for Anatomy of a Fall, I watched, so I didn't think Past Lives was that great. Hmm. I'd watched it. I was like, okay, it's sweet, but it's not like fabulous the way it's made out to be. And Best Original Score, who got Oppenheimer, was very good. But
so
then...
My thing is that...
Was it loud?
Okay, so
I didn't think it was too hot.
I didn't like Oppenheimer, I'll be very honest. I also... Very nerdily, I watched it in the what
hall?
No, I watched it in the thing that Christopher Nolan said you must watch it in the format.
IMAX.
Some IMAX something. So even watched it in that specific format. And I mean, I found it a bit tedious, I feel, especially by the sort of second half, I was maybe losing interest. But okay, I mean, but that said, I knew it would win. I'd have been surprised
if it had not won.
Yeah, so I was sure it would get best picture, director.
Actor
supporting
also.
Actor, I mean, honestly, actor.
Like,
actor,
I didn't think he should get it, but I thought, so best actor in a supporting role that Robert Downey Jr. got it for Oppenheimer, I don't see why he should have.
What was he doing in it? I mean,
honestly, Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things.
Yeah.
And Ryan Gosling was also nominated. Sterling K. Brown was excellent in American Fiction. Robert De Niro, I don't know, was he good in Killers of the Flower Moon?
Yeah.
He was nominated.
So for actor, I mean, I understand why Emma Stone won. And I do think
she brought a lot to that role. She's,
but I also did think that Lily Gladstone was fantastic in Killers of the Flower Moon. But when supporting actor, I mean, for me, Robert Downey Jr. and Oppenheimer was playing himself to a great extent. It was not the performance of a lifetime. So
he had to be a little understated and serious and a little menacing that even I can be, I feel, honestly.
I can totally be. Yeah. I can't. But
even
you know,
then,
when I joined News Laundry, and I was so I have never in my life been intimidating. And so I was like, I'm going to be working remotely with these guys. I can pretend to be intimidating and they'll never know. Like, they'll think that's who I actually am. And I tried it, but it only lasted a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So I would not peg you down for being someone who would be cruel and intimidating. You are doing cruel
and more insulting to my character than making me not watch American Fiction.
The one I felt really bad for is that I'm just seeing, were they not even nominated? Was Maestro not nominated for Best Film?
I think Bradley was nominated. Am I imagining it?
It was, and they didn't win, but they were nominated for Best Director.
Was it a good movie? Did you see it?
It is such a good film. And Best Original Screenplay it was nominated for. And he was nominated for Best Actor, I think. But
he won nothing, no?
He won, poor thing, won nothing. I don't think, did he win for A Star Is Born last time with Lady Gaga? I don't think he won that also.
No, I just remember the intimate song performance.
Oh my God, I think they all remember it. Especially after they broke up, both of them must be remembering it. But that he didn't get it. Because his acting is superb in that film. The film itself, that this man who is very nice, easy on the eye, is capable of directing this. It's really a very sort of layered kind of film, which has a lot of and she was nominated also, Carey Mulligan. But he learned how to compose, he learned how to play the piano. I don't know why they just didn't give it, and I felt like he'll start crying at one point because it kept panning to him, but he kept smiling because he's
a good
actor.
I feel this is an Oscars thing though, you know, like I feel like there's a little checklist, like Robert Downey Jr. has never got an Oscar, he's now an Oppenheimer, which is this prestige project, so we'll give it to him. And then how can you not give it to Cillian Murphy? Even though, I mean, Cillian Murphy, I think, is a great actor.
Yeah.
But in this movie,
I wasn't sure. So. Yeah, exactly. So I don't, even Emily Blunt was.
What was the great acting in it? I don't understand.
Like, which is what I'm saying with what is her name? Emma Stone. I get the act. She's really acted in this film. And especially when she has that, like, she looks like a baby when she's looking at things for the first time. Or when she's a little confused about why someone is telling her you shouldn't do something. Yeah. Which, that the way children look at you, like, why? What is wrong with it? I can't understand what is wrong with it.
She's got these crazy eyes, which are able
she
to
anyway
sort of
has
bring
crazy.
That.
Like, Christina Ricci has those crazy eyes also.
Yes,
but
she does.
I did think that Mark Ruffalo should have. It was so good.
Yeah. He would have been a fun win, you know. Like, he just sort of threw himself into this role. He was enjoying himself so much.
I felt very bad for him that he didn't. Because these were, at least they were acting. The film, which I've been told is excellent, by the way, but it hasn't come here. It's come to Bombay and gone also, is The Zone of Interest.
Huh, that's got the same woman as Anatomy of a Fall, right?
Yeah, and it's supposed to be really, really good.
Yeah, I don't think it played in, I mean, I can't say for sure, but I don't think it played in Chennai either.
I'm sure it will come to Netflix or one of these. But
I rent it on YouTube.
Is it on YouTube? Why don't you rent
don't
it
know.
On Apple, right, when it comes on Amazon Prime?
Because I rented it on Apple and it just vanished. Okay, so this is a warning for all people watching this episode. Apple TV is stealing your money because I have rented it and they've not given it to me yet. So
Apple is just down with the big companies.
Yeah, don't do it, guys.
But
buy an Eco phone.
We get no money from advertising. I just want you all to know. But even
Chinese
then,
funding.
Yeah, so we have got no letters this time, which is shocking. So you must write to us at newslaundry.com/podcast-letters. or podcast@newslaundry.com. And in the subject line, you must write awful and awesome. Otherwise, they will read it out on NL Hafta.
Okay. We will not read it out. Don't worry.
You're so rude. Really.
We will throw them back.
Yes.
See, but it's confusing because Hafta, there's always a bunch of letters saying Rajshree said something terrible, but then they don't.
They mean you.
Yeah. So
you
who
should
knows?
Just say Rajshree is always saying something terrible.
And
anyway.
Rajshree has no clue.
Yeah. Has no clue about politics, rather. I can tell you about Emily Blunt war, though. But we will be back next week. It might be both of us, it might be one of us, it might be none of us. It's anyone's guess, but I should be back.
This is how we keep you on your toes.
Yeah, this is how we keep you on your toes, but I should be back next week for sure. Jayashree will not be speaking to me after she has been made to watch Poor Things.
I need to start a sulk for about
a week. For a week or so, but we will see you next week when the podcast will be available to everyone. You are just too lucky, absolutely. And thank you, Jayashree.
Thank you, Rajshree.
And it's a wrap.
Thank you for your subscription. You're changing the world by changing the way news is funded. For the smoothest News Laundry experience, download the News Laundry app. It is the best way to listen to our paywall podcasts. And you'll also get access to all free News Laundry shows. Keep us ad-free and subscriber-funded. Help us grow. Tell people who listen to you to pay to keep news free. Subscribe to News Laundry. Keep journalism independent.